So, where did you used to play? Some people were telling me, when they played out in the side streets, there were so many fewer cars
There's no
then.
cars. Nobody owned a car.
Right. Well, nobody had a car.
No, we played stickball. I'm telling you, 16th Street between
And
A
you
and
could play there for a long, long
The
time
only time
before.
we couldn't play in that block is when the New York stage scenery parked their trucks in there. We couldn't play in that. Then we'd go down to the Gramercy Boys Club, and we played basketball. You have basketball down there, or sometimes we played softball.
But if you played in the street, you were never interrupted. I mean, nobody would.
Yeah, the cops.
Occasionally,
the cops used to chase.
Oh
us.
Yeah.
Somebody complained, and the cops would come down. And
were these cobblestone streets or flat paved?
No, they were flat paved streets. First Avenue, when I was a little kid, was a cobblestone street. But then I tell you, when they tore up the tracks that time, they repaved it flat. Now they might have been cobblestones before my time, but all 14th Street was cobblestones, and then when they built the when I was a kid, they built the Canarsie subway that goes through 14th Street, then they flattened it out. Second Avenue.
Between 14th and 23rd.
14th and 23rd was a very nice.
Oh, there was more money over there.
Well, the politicians lived over there. Charlie Murphy, I don't know if you heard that name, Charlie.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie Murphy was the boss of Tammany Hall.
Uh-huh.
He was the New York County Democrat. He was the biggest Democratic wheel in
what
state.
In what period? The 20s or the 30s?
In the 15s and the 20s. Yeah, well, it might have been later, earlier than the 15s. Charlie died in 1924, I think. So, and so he was in, he was the strength. He owned the he started the Anawanda Club. That was his Democratic, but that was on 20th Street and 2nd Avenue. That was supposedly the powerhouse of Newark. Even though he was the head of Tammany Hall, which was on 14th Street, everything worked out of the Anawanda.
Is that right?
The Anawanda Club.
On 20th between?
Right on the corner, 20th Street and 2nd Avenue. But it's torn down now. Up the block then was the Florida Flats. These were real classy apartments from the 1880s.
Again on 2nd Avenue?
2nd
Avenue. 21st Street?
Going from 20th to 21st.
On the
west side of the street, so you probably know.
Why were they called the Florida Flats? Is that the actual name, or is that the nickname?
That was what they called them, Florida Flats. They were very, very, as I say, they were built in the 1880s. And they were very classy apartments. I think they were big six-room apartments, fireplaces, and all that kind of thing. And a lot of the politicians lived in there. And as I say, Charlie Murphy lived on 17th. He lived right facing Stuyvesant Park.
Here's Stuyvesant Park. And here's 17th Street.
Charlie Murphy lived in this house. Is that
Here's 17th. Here's
no. This is 17th Street. Yeah, Harry, 17th, he lived right in this. He lived in this house, facing out on the park. And then his Anawanda Club was just a couple of blocks up. In the house next to him was a man named Judge Blake. He was a judge, and his name was Blake. And he had a son, Jimmy Blake. And Jimmy was the author of East Side, West Side.
The song East Side, West Side.
East Side, West Side. Yeah, Jimmy Blake wrote it. And he was my mother's father knew him. He was like their age. This map must have been made after 1927.
Why?
Well, this shows a whole developed corner here.
And that corner was vacant when you?
No, it wasn't vacant, but it was torn down. It was a couple of tenements in there and whatnot.
This is the northeast corner of First and
14th Street, and that was redeveloped, I think, about 1927, somewhere in there, because I only lived like two doors away. In there, one of the tenements that was torn down was occupied by a man named Brown, who was the clam man. He used to have a pushcart that sold clams down on First Avenue. But before him, when my mother was a young little girl, a family named Casey lived in the house they owned it. And in the what do we call it? The verse coming into East Side, West Side? Where you the verse and then you sing the refrain? Well, it starts up down in front of Casey's old brown wooden stoop. And that was there. That's what Casey's had, and had an old brown wooden stoop for him. And that's the family Casey's. And that's where he picked that up. Because he used to come down. He was very active in the Immaculate Conception. In those days, they used to have these church plays and whatnot. And he was involved in it. He was a songwriter. And he'd come down that way, and he'd walk through 14th Street, and I think that's where he picked it up.
Do you remember any of those Union rallies in Union Square at all?
Oh, sure, communists, yeah. That were very strong over there in Union Square. That was in the In the late 20s, you know, I was like maybe 10 years old, 11 years old. We used to go over and watch them at the hell they were doing.
Was there anybody from the neighborhood who was involved in that, or are they all?
No, the communists with the
Irish? No,
forget it.
It's like oil and water.
That's right. All the cops were Irish.
Right, too. Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, you were talking about.
Well, but that doesn't mean, was there any union activity in there? There could have been union activity.
Well, there was military.
We said the steam fitters and stuff.
Well, the steam fitters had their own union. Mm-hmm. There was probably union activity among the communists, but I don't know what the hell they were. Mm-hmm. They had a newspaper, I forget what the name of it was.
What, the Daily Worker?
The Worker, yeah. Well, right. That was published off just in Union Square, I think, right off, I think at University Place or someplace in there, right off Union Square.
Mm-hmm. But was there any, do you remember, like, any union organizing in the gas house district at all? Like, among the gas house workers or anything like that?
They were all, if they were unionized, they belonged to the steam fitters union.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of employment at Eagle Pencil Factory.
Yeah, where was that?
It was on the corner of 14th Street and Avenue C. That would be on the southeast corner of 14th Street and Avenue C.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big employer, The Willard Parker Hospital was a very big employer.
Mm-hmm.
In 17th Street near Avenue C was Goodman's Noodle Factory. Mm-hmm. They had the noodle, you know, you buy Goodman's noodles.
Mm-hmm.
They had a factory that people worked there. The Bull's Head had people working there. In 16th Street between B and C, you don't have to go down that far, Mrs. Wagner's Pie Factory was there. That was a pie factory.
Mm-hmm.
And
so your father was a fireman on 14th Street at that firehouse.
Right.
Was that the firehouse that served the gas house district? There was not a firehouse elsewhere in the gas house.
Well, there was a firehouse there was a firehouse in 5th Street,
uh-huh.
which would come up a little, and there was a firehouse in 26th Street, which came down a little.
Mm-hmm.
But my father's five engine primarily served the gas house district.
Hmm. Is your father on there?
Yeah.
Which one is he?
The driver.
He's the driver.
My old man was famous down there. Where the hell is he?
I got another picture.
You can borrow these, and if you'll send them back to me, that's a picture.
What kind of personality did your father have?
He was a regular Irish. His name was Charles Sweeney, like mine, but he was red haired. He was Red Sweeney, everybody called him. And all the kids in the neighborhood used to love him because he was the red haired guy that drove the fire engine.
Uh-huh.
And he'd be always. And he used to hate the pushcart people on First Avenue. It used to be on First Avenue from 14th down to 2nd Street with pushcarts.
Right.
And he used to go crazy with them because if he had to go down there and they had a fire.
Oh, they'd be in the way.
Oh, he just ran the car and knocked them all over. He didn't give a damn one way or the other. This picture was taken probably about 1923.
Yeah, this one is dated. This one says taken about 25, 26.
Yeah, that's a little later, that one. And the old man is in
Charles Sweeney. Your father was Charles Sweeney?
Yeah.
So you're Charles Sweeney Jr. or the third?
Well, I was known as Junior, but my father's father was, God bless you, father was also Charles, but he had passed away. So my father was senior, I was junior, my son was Charles the third, and his son is Charles the fourth. I mean,
good heavens,
we just had
so this is him second from the left on the front
that's
row here?
That's the old man, yeah.
To Immaculate Conception Church School. Through what grades?
From first through eighth. I graduated.
Uh-huh.
We moved to Queens in 1931.
Oh, you went to Jackson
High. I came back to finish school in
right.
the Immaculate. So
right.
I could show you. Anya, would you do me a favor, honey? Get that picture that Vicky sent to me. It's on the table over by the...
See, you left the neighborhood in 31.
I left the neighborhood in 31, but I went to school till 32.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was there most of the time, 32. Then I went to high school in 2nd Street and 2nd Avenue, God bless you, La Salle. And
that's still there.
Yeah, I know. They took over, if you remember, Moskowitz and Lukowitz. Mm-hmm. That was on the corner. It was a big Jewish restaurant. And there's La Salle. But La Salle's been there since, I think, 1858 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's an old school. But during the 4 years at La Salle, I used to walk up with the fellas I went to school with them. We'd stop in, or maybe my father had the car, and I'd say, well, I'll stick around and I'll go home with you, because they used to get off at 6 o'clock sometimes.
Right.
And I'd wait for him, and then we'd go out to Jackson. He'd take a couple of prime and we'd go out to Jackson Heights.
Right.
And then in 1934, we had a principal in Immaculate, a brother Vincent. He started an alumni club for the Immaculate. And I went in frequently to go to the alumni club and go to dances. I played basketball in the in the thing. So my contact with them was from, it was as late as 1935. So I mean, I was very much involved because I visited the guys that I knew and I hung out in some of the places there. So it wasn't so much that I cut myself off in 31. I really continued, continued on.
Can I ask you something? You know, something I read in a book about the development of Stuyvesant Town said that the gas house, the population of the gas house peaked like after World War One, and then it gradually declined until they tore it down in 45.
Yeah, well,
so if it peaked at, I don't know the exact numbers, but let's say it's peaked at, say, 40,000, and by the time they tore the neighborhood down, maybe the population was down to 25,000.
Yeah, well,
why were people moving out?
Because it was not the quality neighborhood. It was cold water flats and whatnot, and then meanwhile, right after World War One. No, not that one. The one that Vicky sent me.
It's
on the table by the where the.
It was, but it's not there now.
Vicky, you got this out of the thing. It's covered with a white piece of paper. It's.
I know.
You know, on the round table, hon. What happened is the people were moving. Not if the Canarsie subway line was built in the middle 20s, and that opened up, and a lot of people moved from the guest house out to Ridgewood in Queens and Brooklyn. If you're familiar with those areas. And after World War One, there was a tremendous amount of construction out in Sunnyside in Queens, Woodside in Queens, and Jackson Heights. And people from the west side generally moved to the Jackson Heights area. We were unusual, but most of them from the people in Sunnyside and Woodside were all from the east side. And a lot of gas houses moved out there because there were modern buildings. There were steam heated flats, as they call them. They call them steam-heated flats or steam-heated apartments, and it was a step up in the social world.
Right, right.
And the other buildings, of course, were falling apart, so a lot of them had been torn down, and a lot of them were boarded up.
I mean, in the gas house.
In the gas house,
yeah, right.
Like the stuff around 18th Street over by the river, I mean, that was, you know, forget. And most of the other stuff was not so. Along First Avenue, the stuff was maintained pretty well. And but on Long Avenue,
that for one another. I mean, was there like, you know, the politicians? The politicians must have been responsible for getting people jobs and things like that.
People jobs, they get to make sure they had food, make sure they had their rent paid. They just took care.
There was a
but as long as you voted Democrat,
right, right. As long as you voted for the ticket,
I voted Democrat, which everybody they were. Everybody was a Democrat. And Tammany, you know. As bad as it was, as good as it was, they always took care of everybody. They made sure there was nobody needed clothing, or they needed rent money, or they needed food. You just went to the, they had captains, what they call captains.
Award captains.
Well, yeah, district captains.
Yeah.
And then we had a district leader. Like Billy Keneally was the district leader, let's say, from 14th Street to, say, 21st Street. And in that area, he was the district leader. And then up further from 23rd Street going up to, say, 28th Street. My own cousin, prior to 1934, I think, he was the district leader up there. And then he was succeeded by a fellow named Jimmy Fay. Jimmy was a World War One veteran. He had lost a leg in the war, but he was also the deputy commissioner of hospitals for the city of New York. So he became the district leader up there. And during the Depression, he made sure everybody got jobs in the hospitals, Willa Parker, Bellevue. He was a deputy commissioner, so he made sure that everybody in the neighborhood was taken. Willie was the big district leader up there. He was kind of a tough, rough, tough guy, and he kept everybody under knuckle hands. That's why I didn't want to get involved. He wasn't a gangster, but he was a real rough, tough guy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. If anybody got out of order, if anybody like got loaded at the saloon,
they threw him out of here. They threw him down the stairs. They didn't care. I mean, be careful what you call.
No, that's what I meant about, like, when, you know, taking care of your own. That part of that means looking out after the neighborhood and making sure, you know.
Yeah, if you had some trouble with somebody and they were going to hurt you or something, you went up and see them. And first thing you know, that guy who showed up with a broken nose and a blanket, and that was the end of the kind of a problem. No, I mean, they were real tough birds. That was in the era of the what, honey?
When they voted, how they voted.
They used to go over to Calvary, copying the names off the headstones, and then vote them.
The Calvary in Queens.
I mean, they used to call Calvary an Irish boarding house. All the names in old Calvary were all Irish names.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are they doing in Chicago these days? I'm not telling you anything that
no, that hasn't been said before.
That, that they go to the cemeteries and take the names, especially where you have paper ballots.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guys would go around and they were O'Hara here and they were McNulty here and then the other place.
They give the young people money, like $5 or whatever, what they did about that time. Vote again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that was the second time around.
Vote early and often.
Yeah, yeah, vote early and vote often.
I'm not telling you, that's an old comedy trick. It's an old Democratic trick in Boston and in Chicago, wherever you had a big concentration of the Irish politicians.
This is side A, tape number 2 of an interview with Charles Sweeney on Saturday, July 29th, 1995.
All right, now you were asking about police station. It was police station in 5th Street.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 9th precinct. That precinct went from 14th Street to Houston Street, from Broadway to the river.
Mm-hmm.
And in the period of 1908 to 1918, that was commanded by my father's brother, John Sweeney. Mm-hmm. He was captain in that thing. And he, in 1915, founded the Junior Police Corps. The motto was a policeman is a child's friend. And that's now the PAL.
Mm-hmm.
So John was the founder of the PAL.
What year was that?
Founded the PAL in 1915.
And I'm sorry, this was your great uncle?
No, my uncle, my father's brother.
Oh, your uncle, right.
Yes. My grandfather was married twice. His first wife died. He had a family of 5 children. His first wife died. Mm-hmm. He married my grandmother, who was a widow, and she had 3 children. And subsequently, they had 3 children between them. So the spread between my grandfather's first family and my father, who was the baby, was like 35 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So the first family weren't too happy that they had all these young people. So that was it. John was, he was captain there and then he became a deputy inspector. And then subsequently, after he retired, he was a chief of police down in Long Beach for many years down there. That was his... contribution. His son Charlie, should I say his name is Charles, was the deputy city chamberlain. That was an office we had.
Deputy city
chamberlain.
Chamberlain.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then he was the last chamberlain because they polished that office in the early middle 30s, about 35, when they went from the board of aldermen and became the proportional representation, and they abolished the office of chamberlain.
What was the office of chamberlain responsible for?
Really, it was treasurer. Treasurer. And he also was
like the comptroller, or
no, treasurer.
Uh huh.
The controller controls, but the treasurer puts the money in the bank.
Yeah, right.
So he was that, and they had a band, the city band. He was in charge of. I don't know. There was a lot of city functions he was in charge of. Grover Cleveland was the city greeter. You probably heard about him. Grover Whalen was the city. City greeter, but he used to have to get the band from Charlie. So when they had all these big parades and all that kind of stuff. Have you ever heard of Johnny Broderick?
No.
The famous cop with his Broadway flying squad. You can look that up.
No, what was
he
that?
Used to keep Broadway cleaned up, and no gamblers, no riffraff, and no nothing. And he had what they call the Broadway flying. He came from the guest house. As a matter of fact, he and Jimmy Fay were classmates of my father in the Carmelite School, which is in, I forget, it's 26th Street or 29th Street. And he was a very famous cop. So, during the Prohibition period in the 20s. But before he was a cop, he was a fireman for a while. He went on the fire department, my father. And they were all friends. They grew up together and whatnot. But you look up Johnny Broderick. He's very well known in that. Okay, I'll tell you about Johnny Broderick.
Now, Broderick commanded this Broadway flying squad.
Well, he wasn't a commander, he was a policeman.
Oh, right. Oh, he was in the Broadway
flying
squad.
He formed the Broadway, they called it the Broadway flying squad. They used to, if there were gamblers or, if you forgive me, pimps on Broadway, unmarked cars, and they would beat the hell out of them and chase them, and they didn't come back. So Broadway was as clean as a whistle.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Broadway flying squad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me see, what do I got here for you? Okay, now 14th Street, I gave you about the Mecca and Rudolph Valentino. And also, are you familiar with Baby Rosemarie? You know Rosemarie?
Rosemarie, who was on the Dick Van Dyke show.
Dick Van Dyke show, all right. Rosemarie's from the neighborhood. She lived in 11th Street. She was a child entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
She made her debut in the Mecca around 1926.
Because did they used to do vaudeville shows at the Mecca also?
Yeah, for a little while.
Uh-huh.
But the biggest vaudeville shows were over in the Jefferson. That's on 14th Street.
That's still Fairhaven. There, although it's been empty for years. It's boarded up now.
That was the second biggest vaudeville house. You went from the Jefferson to the Palace. This is the vaudeville.
The Palace was uptown?
Yeah, Palace is up on Broadway. That was the biggest vaudeville house in the country.
Mm-hmm.
The prime vaudeville house.
But you started at the Jefferson.
No, well, that was the second place. There was
the circuit.
Mm-hmm. The Jefferson was the second to the Palace.
The Palace was
the cream. And in those days when you had vaudeville, you had to have a fireman on duty in the movie house. It was a movie house, and then they had the vaudeville house.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the five engines supplied the firemen for the Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to go around to the stage door on 13th Street, and the stage door pop was on the door, and I said,
Right. Would
you get me the fireman? And the fireman and I go into the movies, into the theater for nothing.
Right.
And then after a while, the pop begin to know me, so they didn't bother with the friends.
Right, right.
Said, don't sit here, sit there, or what else. Okay, whatever you tell me.
Right.
And the only time I got put out is there was a guy named NTG who was a big Broadway producer.
NTG?
Yeah, Niels T. Granlin. But he was a Broadway producer, and he produced big stage shows.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a stage show that, this was not with the vaudeville, this was the whole vaudeville act now, this was the whole... Well, I can't help it. Vaudeville act, and he had the NTG review, and I went in to watch the movie, and it was a little racy thing.
Right, right. And you were what, like 12 or 13 now?
I was about 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting there, all of a sudden, the fireman comes down, he says, come on, you get out of here, your old man might not be in here. The girl had bared herself.
Right.
He put me out.
This is the Jefferson.
The Jefferson, uh-huh. Yeah. So that, I remember that. That's the only time I got put out of there.
Is that right?
I mean, I went back later, but that, right. I couldn't go there for that show anymore.
Right.
Tammany Hall used to have, like, they used to have dances on Sunday, mm-hmm. for the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother and father met there. My mother often told Beatty, she said, she never should have went to Tammany Hall. Is that right?
Your mother and father met at Tammany Hall?
They met at Tammany Hall, yeah. It was a dance.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, you meet a girl at a dance, and but that's where they met. Oh, yeah, well, he was famous in those days.
He's got a lot of cops and firemen in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well, the Irish were either cops, firemen, or priests. You
right.
know, used to be every family had a cop and a priest. Politician, don't forget the politician.
Yeah, right.
Politicians.
What did the Germans and the Italians do?
Well, the Italians were laborers because they came over later.
Uh-huh.
Right.
They didn't start to come over until... what was it? 1900, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
When Ellis Island. Ellis
oh,
Island.
The 1880s, 1890s.
The Irish were here from the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans came a little later, and then the Italians and the Middle Europeans
right.
came over when Ellis Island
mm-hmm.
opened. That was really the big influx. Prior to that, there were also some Jewish from Poland. They'd mm-hmm. come over a little earlier.
Yeah.
Well, they lived down in the
Lower East Side.
Yeah, there were no Jews in the Gas House District, were there?
Well, they had businesses there.
Mm-hmm.
I got a picture of. I'm going to give it to you. They had the Lipkins, who were great friends. They lived in the house next to us, and they had a dry cleaning and pressings, and they lived behind the store, which a lot of them do. Neuberger was in the electric business. He was on the other side of the store. These are stores that were in the tenements that we lived in.
Mm-hmm. This was when you moved on to
14th Street. This is on 14th. I'll give you a picture. You can have that picture if you want it.
You're talking about Dick
Seery.
Oh, Dick Seery. Well, he was just, as I say, neighborhood character.
Why was he known as the mayor of the gas house?
That was his, you always have something. You got Nightmare of Broadway, you have the mayor of the gas house, you have the mayor of whatever, It was just, remember, these were a conglomeration of small neighborhoods,
uh-huh.
and everybody had somebody who was the honorary mayor or your political leaders, like downtown in Mulberry Bend. Jimmy Kelly was the big district leader down there because he was there before the time. He was still there, and he was known as the mayor of that part
mm-hmm.
of the town. Shavy Lee was he had a Chinese, Shavy Lee was from Chinatown. He was in the insurance business, and Shavy was known as the mayor of Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was just, he used to get jobs for people, and he was, with a finger into everything, and So,
so what was Dick Seary's story? Well, I mean,
he was what we call a Shanachie. That's an Irish name.
Shanachie. I saw that in your letter, but I didn't know what that was.
It's an Irish name for storyteller. Uh-huh. He knew all kinds of stories. He'd go out in the kitchen while the wait was going on, where he always had, you know, drinks and sandwiches.
Right.
And he'd sit there for hours telling them different stories about this, that, and the other. He was a great guy. He was a great raconteur. We call him a Shanachie.
Call
him a raconteur. he was well known. Uh-huh. I don't know if he ever worked.
Was he friends with your family? Did he used to come to your house?
No. He didn't go to anybody's house except when it was away.
Uh-huh.
No, you went to Dick, you found him in the Anawanda Club, or you found him in the gin mill. That my cousin was one of his partners in there.
Which gin mill was that?
The one on 26th Street. Henny the Dutchman, who really ran the place. He was there all the time. And Bill Curry, there was a congressman on that part of it. His name was O'Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin Bill was his secretary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was into politics up to his ears. He was a district leader. He was into everything.
Right.
All kinds of mischief. Shush.
You came back after the war, and you went to the gas house before they tore it down, right?
We were married, and... We had two kids, and my mother and father were with us. I think we were going to go to dinner in Luchow's that night.
Right.
And we were over on First Avenue, and we went into the church, but they were still tearing down 14th.
Can you talk to anybody? Do you remember, I mean, this is a long time ago to remember one night and one night's conversations, but was there a sense in the neighborhood, do you get a sense of people being angry that the neighborhood was being torn down in favor of Stuyvesant Town?
I think so, but I didn't meet anybody that, uh-huh. that I
Uh-huh.
Some of the families didn't like that they had to move, but this was life, so they did move.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them moved uptown to the west side, some of them moved
over to
30. Yeah, a lot of them moved. Some of them moved, then they were starting the Clarks. They bought a house in Levittown, and they were moving all over.
Because I think there was some opposition, like for a year or two before they tore it down, when Metropolitan Life made its plans.
Yeah, well, they were going to destroy the churches.
Well, it was Metropolitan Life and Robert Moses who had this plan to raise the neighborhood, and I think there was some opposition to that originally.
Yeah, well, you know, the neighborhood was pretty well keyed in one to the other now.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I was out of it now.
Right, right.
This is like almost 15 years after I had moved. I think if I was still there, I would have had opposition to the stage where I was.
Right.
Didn't make it.